Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hello, and welcome to The Power of Reinvention. I'm so excited to have on my show today the amazing Dave Zabosky. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Hi, yeah. Dave.
Yeah, yep, hello. I got it. Great to see you. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Zabosky. Oh, yeah. With a name like that, there's a lot of permutations. So anywhere close is perfect.
And, you know, we've known each other for so long, and I don't think I've ever really had to, like, say your last name. So I'm looking at it in writing going, wait, how do we pronounce that? So I just want to welcome everybody and welcome you, Dave. This is a really fun opportunity for us to put our minds together and share a really special conversation. For those who have been following some of my podcasts over the last year and a half, The Power of Reinvention was created on the heels of the book that I launched very early in the days of COVID. It wasn't intentional, but my book, Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? Came out on March 7th, the week before we were all sent home, to kind of, you know, sit back and think about our lives. So ironically, it became the ultimate guidebook for that period of our time. And I really leaned into that. And instead of going on tour all around the country and doing book launch events in bookstores, I kind of brought the book launch events to me, had a virtual chat series, got to interview some of the most extraordinary people and have the most amazing, I think almost business and personal therapy conversations during that period, and also launched my podcast about a year and a half ago. So I've been very blessed to really have some incredible, thoughtful conversations with people about all parts of our lives, the business, the personal, the hobbies, the relationships, the spiritual, all the things that we live and sometimes think about, sometimes lean into, sometimes don't think about and don't lean into. And I think the one resounding thing that I love to really share is that it's really important that we all know that we are entitled to live the life that we want. And no matter what our circumstances, where we are, what part of our lives needs a little tweaking, lean into it. Question everything, pause, reflect, give ourselves the grace to be who we potentially could be in this life and to go after what we want. And that's what these conversations are all about. So I can think of no one better than Dave to really have this incredible conversation with. So thank you for being on my show. I'm really excited.
I'm glad to be here.
For those who don't know you, I'm going to give a little background on you, and then we're going to delve into some really interesting conversation and questions. So Dave is the co-founder and chief creative officer of Letro.com, a tech-enabled community of the world's finest creatives, serving enterprise customers with best-in-class design services. He's a classically trained painter and was an animator at Disney, Sony, and Warner Brothers during the second golden age of animation. He worked on Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Pocahontas, Aladdin, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Fantasia 2000, and a whole bunch of others. He has illustrated several acclaimed children's books, including titles for Dr. Ken Dykvold, Dr. Deepak Chopra, finance guru Rick Edelman, and actor Paul Michael Glaser. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to talk about everything else because there is so much in what you have done. And more importantly, we hearken back to our college days together. We have a history. We have a group of mutual friends, and we've been blessed to kind of stay connected. We've been at some incredible business conferences at the same time and just kind of stayed in each other's worlds. And I'm just delighted that we're here and that we're getting to do this.
Yeah, me too. Me too. This is wonderful. It's sort of nice to be a witness to the long arc of our lives.
Right? And it's getting longer, longer and longer. Yeah. So I'm going to start, Dave, with one of my favorite questions, which is, let's take you back in time. Let's understand a little bit before we talk about the present and what you're doing and the profound impact that you're having on not only the world and the people in your life, but some incredible businesses and companies. And tell us a little bit about who was little Dave. What did little Dave do at the age of five? Was he doodling and coloring in the lines, out of the lines? Right. What was that 12-year-old Dave? Did you have any idea where you'd end up and what you wanted to do? Were there early signs, or is this like a complete left turn?
Well, I think that you know, I really love this topic, Kathy, of reinvention, you know, because I think that we, you know, we sort of come into the world with a base desire, passion, and maybe, you know, in India, in Hinduism, they call it a samskara, that thing that you came into this world with as sort of an emphasis, that thing that you brought maybe from another life. And for me, it was creativity. I picked up a crayon when I was a kid, and I don't think I ever put it down. I was the consummate doodler in all of my classes. I'll tell you a quick story. I got a D+ in high school art because everybody said, Dave, you draw all the time. You should take a art class. And so I did. I took an art class. I promptly got a D+ in that class, mostly because I had done so much art already that to do the really simplistic exercises that I think by the time she was teaching this class, it was a blow-off class, 10 projects, 10 points per project. If you're competent on all of them, then you won't get a bad grade and it won't impact the AP classes and other things you were doing. But if you wanted to be an artist, then it wasn't really meant for you. And so I was a little bit too, you know, maybe not following her instructions as carefully as I could have because I wanted to make art. That same semester, I was in a social studies class where I drew on the desk every day. At the end of the semester, the instructor called me up and he said, Dave, it was you drawing on the desk every day, wasn't it? And I was like, yeah, I guess it was. He said, well, listen, I want to tell you, I'm going to give you a B in this class, but because you drew on the desk every day, after class, all of the teachers in this row would come and see what you drew, made me look good, so I'm going to bump you a grade. I'm going to give you an A. And so this one semester in high school, I got a D+ in high school art for being too social and an A in social studies for being so arty. And that was a little confusing for me, right?
You know, like, I love that. Like,
it just didn't make any sense.
Right.
The good thing was that I had done enough art in my life that the D+ didn't break me. It kind of made me put it away a little bit. And then so when I went to college, to UC Santa Barbara with you, I did a lot of art on the side. I did art for friends for their birthdays because you can't get a D+ on a birthday present. I got degrees in clinical psychology and French literature, and I didn't take any art classes in college. I just made art. When I graduated, and I think I was mentioning this when we had a chat earlier, my big Jewish family in Los Angeles said, hey, now that you've graduated from college, you can do anything you want in your life. What kind of doctor or lawyer is that going to be?
Option A or option B? Great.
Right. Yeah. Cool. You can do anything. Which is it going to be, doctor or lawyer?
Right.
So I explored law. I got a job in a big law firm. I took the LSAT, did pretty well on it. And I worked in this law firm for a year and I hated every minute of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking that what I really wanted to do in my life was be at that fulcrum point, that point where the pencil met the paper, that place that made a difference, you know, not looking at forms and, you know, kind of creating documents and things based on precedent, stuff that had come before. I wanted to innovate. I wanted to be that person where the pencil met the paper. And so knowing that I hated the work in the law firm, I went to all of my friends who I had done paintings and drawings for their birthdays, and I collected them all back saying, hey, I think I'm going to go to art school. Can I borrow these things back? And everybody that I asked was like, we have been waiting to hear this from you. And so I took it to this school called Art Center College of Design, which is here in Los Angeles and perennially the top art school in the world. And I didn't expect to get into that art school. I just went there to say, hey, what do I need to be able to get into an art school? You know, maybe not of this caliber, but you know, if I wanted to go to art school, what do I need? And they said, put your portfolio over there and we'll let you know. And I got in. And it was kind of a surprise. I immediately went to the law firm and said, here are my 2 weeks. And I started at Art Center.
How did your parents feel about that?
You know, it was challenging because it was also expensive. And I'd already been to college. So basically, I was going to pay for it. And so, and they recognized that there was a passion that leads to success. It's not just passion that's necessary, but the passion leads to a kind of discipline that is necessary for success. And I didn't have that for law as much as I had it for art. You know, man, when I got into my little Honda Civic after a day of Art Center, I felt like I wanted to shift into sixth gear. I was so excited about it. I was like, I will never do anything else. This is my career.
You found your calling.
I did. It was, you know, it was challenging. There were times when I was really blocked and I realized that I had to become a student of creativity, not just an artist. You know, in a way, it's sort of like you look at Phil Jackson was a great basketball player, but also a great coach because he was a student of the game. And I felt that was also really important, not just to be a skilled artist, but to be a student of the idea of creativity. And
do you feel that I want to just ask a question. Do you feel like anything that you learned, I mean, you take, you know, the diametric, what seems like diametric opposites of a law degree and the education that one gets as a lawyer, and the way your mind critically thinks, analyzes, do you feel like any of that was brought into the creative art space? It's such an interesting dichotomy of these two worlds and the mind.
Right. Well, I think that where they can meet is in that place of discipline. Like you have to be an artist the same way a lawyer is a lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't just, in fact, that's really that's one of the reasons that when I got to Disney, I was just so amazed. You know, they had this internship program where they recruited from the top 50 schools in the country and they'd bring, you know, you'd put your portfolio together and they would select 15 students to go into an internship that then they would pick 3 people or 2 people a year in that internship to be full-time employees at Disney. It's kind of like a Project Runway sort of internship, you know? Mm-hmm. And I applied for it 3 years in a row. The first 2 years I was in the final 15 portfolios or final 50 portfolios, but I didn't get an invitation. The third year I did. And so when I landed at Disney as one of these 15 students from around the country, I saw the level of commitment to creativity that was as dedicated or more than any of the work that was done in the law firm. Like it was, you couldn't just say, hey, it's Tuesday, I don't feel like creating. There were systems and practices in place to get all of these wild horses pointed in the right direction to be able to create and co-create together these magnificent projects. We were never competing with each other. We were competing with the legacies, the monsters that came before us. Mm. And so that was super inspiring for me to really understand the level of commitment that it took to be a professional at anything.
Yeah. Incredible. You know, it's fascinating because so you spent time at Disney and then you went on from there to do what?
Well, you know, it was really interesting to think about reinvention. You know, when I was in art school and kind of doing freelance stuff, there was a ton of freedom. It was amazing. I could do whatever I want. I worked on things, but I had my own life. They put this contract in front of me at Disney for the next 3 years. And it kind of freaked me out because it was a turning point in how I would invent myself. At the time in 1990 at Disney, there are people that they would have these luncheons every month of people who had been at Disney for a certain period of time, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 35 years, 50 years, right? Like there's people who had been at Disney their whole lives. Yeah. And I thought when they put this contract in front of me, on the one hand, it was very exciting. I was one of 2 or 3 people a year that got a job in the animation department at Disney. And oh my God, 3 years at that time was like, I don't know, you know, like, I had this panic attack. Like, I'm going to never have another job in my life. And then about a decade later, when I decided to leave, I had that same kind of feeling. Oh, my God, I got to go back out into the world. I'm not going to be at Disney for my whole career. And so that kind of happened because there were some things I saw at Disney that I saw shift. I saw our ability to be generously collaborative kind of break and become much more of a top-down approach to creativity, where they Wow. stopped listening to the amazing creatives and really sort
that
of...
That can be a little soul-crushing, I would imagine.
I mean, the thing that was so powerful at that time at Disney was that we felt that generous collaboration was the fastest accelerant to excellence. Like, you wanted to be great at something, you learned how to play nice, how to share and be shared with. There was such a cauldron of generosity and creativity in that place. You know, you could lean over somebody's cubicle. What kind of pencil are you using? How did you draw that hand? You know, all of these tools that we could share with each other that allowed us to plus each other in ways that I think the results are on screen.
Right.
When I saw that changing, I thought, you know, they sent me to Paris for a year to help build the studio in Paris and recruit, not actually build the studio, but to recruit and be a part of the team out there. And Paris, you know, it's a city filled with magical art. There's creative expression on every street corner.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was going to be really hard for me to come back and be a cartoonist, especially seeing sort of cracks in the edifice of
you got a chance to kind of like pull back, right? And get a little perspective on where you were sitting every day at that point.
Right. Right. You know, and also not being afraid of reinventing. You know, I went to school in France when I was in college and I didn't know anybody in any of my classes, the only American in any of my classes. That was reinvention. Then I went from law to art school. That was a reinvention. You know, then I went from, you know, the freedom of art school into a corporate environment. That was another one. So by the time it came for me to consider leaving Disney, I had some practice at the idea that this is my life, that I can create the things that I want to create for myself. The challenge at that time was nobody else thought I should leave Disney. You know, like I could see things from the inside and thought, I'm not convinced that this is the best path for my creativity. But everybody I talked to was like, oh, you just did all of these amazing films. Are you kidding? Where else are you going to go? So one of the things that I did, and this might be an invitation or tool for anybody out there that's thinking about a reinvention. And in these super unpredictable times, I mean, we're always looking for how do we manifest what it is that we want to create for ourselves and how do we think about today and tomorrow at the same time. So one of the things that I did, because I knew I couldn't, as much as I loved my friends, I wasn't convinced I could get a really straight answer out of them, you know, like, don't leave Disney. It's a well-paying job. I couldn't talk to my family about it. By the time I was, you know, a decade into Disney, they had finally been like,
right. Okay, they were finally getting it.
Right, all right. For the first 5 years, they're like, okay, great. You made a nice cartoon. What's your what's your A plan?
Right.
You
know? Now it's like, now it looks like he's got a steady job.
Yeah. You know, like, all right, cool. This is his A plan. Fine.
Right.
And then I was thinking about leaving. So one of the things that I did was I wrote a letter to myself from 50 years in the future. And so I was, I think, 35 at the time. And it was a really powerful exercise. I imagined a future where that person 50 years in the future had made a decision at this point in their life and it had made all the difference. And so what was it? So I had this conversation with myself 50 years in the future. And the first thing he said was, you got to jump. You know, you got to take that chance. This is your life.
And that comes with age and wisdom, which sometimes in the moment, we don't really see that. And we're so paralyzed by the fear and the risk and everybody else's, let alone our own voices in our head going, you're crazy, don't do that. So what a brilliant way to look at it. And
it made a big difference for me. And I read the letter many times after that. And I have this relationship with 85-year-old Dave. I just turned 60 last week. So we're getting closer to each other.
That's great.
But who that person is and who I am are on a course towards each other. And that there's a kind of confidence in that. Like, I know that the choices that I make are grounded in a bigger arc. And so when the pandemic happened and my consultancy, you know, I had left Disney and I started consulting with companies on the creative process, doing live talks and live workshops. And that was not going to happen during the pandemic. So I thought, you know, there's another opportunity to reinvent. And so that's where one of my clients, who is a senior marketing director at Google, Brett Wilms, we just had the best time with each other. And for years, even before the pandemic, we talk once a week or a couple times a week about ideas about creativity and creators. How do we help them? Because he's in the tech industry and I'm in the entertainment industry. And we both see the challenges that creators have.
Yeah.
There are no more super long contracts at Disney. Nobody's going to work at Disney for 40 years anymore. Not in the creative departments anyway. I talked to an artist a couple months ago who was getting week-long contracts with Disney with like a net 90 on payment. You know, the glamour of working for Marvel is kind of over. You're not going to be there for 30 years working on Marvel projects. You're probably going to be there for run of show or 3 months. You go into crunch time, 60 to 80 hours a week, and you have to be looking for another job at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. So, wow.
That's why we built Lytro, is to create a place where we could have both freelancers and have a community of creatives. So we, you know, that was another reinvention. I'm like an incidental tech exec now. We're a bona fide Silicon Valley startup. We did a raise on a valuation of $30 million in December because of the amazing product to market fit we found in a really short time, bringing all these amazing creatives together. So
talk a bit about what you're doing. Yeah, I mean, that's congratulations to you, because that is an extraordinary transition, and to bring these two worlds together, you know, spot on. You know, none of us can really function in a world today where technology is not somehow a critical presence or central to so much of what we do. But, you know, one doesn't typically think of those two in harmony. You've created not only the harmony, but built an amazing business around it. Speak about the structure, because I know you have a collective of incredible people and creatives. And what does that look like? And who and how do you service the businesses and the community? You know, just share a bit more about the company, because I think it's quite extraordinary what you're doing.
Well, yeah, we had both, Brett and I, been deep into the creative fields in both of our industries. And we're looking at what worked and what didn't work. And the ecosystem, it basically has these two poles. One pole is you get a freelance creative for your company to help you with creative projects. And you kind of take your chances. There's some places where you can go fishing for them, you know, Behance and Dribbble and, you know, 99 Designs and Fiverr. But you're kind of taking a chance finding a freelancer. Or you can go the other route, which is the agency, where you can have reliable agencies. They're pretty expensive. They're a little less transparent. And there are other challenges with the agency. But when looking at the ecosystem and seeing just those two poles, we thought, well, what if we could find a place in the middle? So you have your sort of do-it-yourself or the do-it-for-you. Could we live in a place that's kind of a do-it-with-you space? So it's maybe a little bit more expensive than finding a freelancer, but a lot less expensive than using an agency. And you get the same or better quality of work because they're actually more intricately involved. And so with Lytro, what we've done is we've aggregated on the supply side incredible creatives from my ecosystem of amazing artists that have never really worked in the enterprise field. They've done a lot of stuff in the entertainment industry. And then we've, on the demand side, brought in a bunch of enterprise clients who are looking for great creative, maybe don't want to do the same thing that they've done in the past by using agencies, and are looking for fresh creative talent that hasn't maybe worked in that industry for new ideas. And then we have, use technology to create the admin in between. So we basically have a product that streamlines all of the contracts, the SOWs, the agreements, the production management, the invoicing and the payment, that all of those things that both sides kind of hate, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Amazing. Like, good for you for taking that on.
Right. And so it's been really complicated because we do kind of all of creative, everything from, you know, illustration, which is where we started, to ads and UI, UX, SEO, SEM, all of the TLAs that are come from the tech world, you know, motion graphics, you know, even like campaigns and rebranding, because we've got some super creative and really smart people on the creative side who are loving sinking their teeth into the kind of things that they like. Imagine there's a skill set for storyboarder, right? Sequential art. You want to tell a story about something. Netflix. Yeah, that's cool. You can work at Netflix. But what about a medical device company who has a patient journey and they want to describe what that patient journey is? That's a story that the storyboard artists are perfectly positioned to be able to support in ways that those companies have never had that kind talent or storytelling power before.
Right. And not something that is natural or organic to their industry or their business, but has that
right. So we can get work for these guys, get great work for those guys, and kind of bring it all together. And one of the other things that we've done from the start, even when we were bootstrapping this thing, is we paid our artists immediately. They turn in work, they get paid. There's net nothing. There's no, you know, because we've got this system, they bank their hours and they get it dropped into their wallet on their dashboard immediately. And that, you know, that I think I'm really proud of that aspect of it, because one, we get loyalty from our creatives, and two, they freaking get paid. Yeah. They don't have to chase their, you know, invoices. And so
amazing.
We're feeling pretty good about what it is that we're creating. It's a complicated world, and with AI coming in and things like that, you know, I still think we're ahead of the curve because our professionals are top notch and they're still better than scraping the internet. So
right. Okay, so you bring up the magic word. I mean, who can have a conversation these days without those two letters creeping into it? And given the power, the magnitude, the scariness of it all, the impact on incredibly creative humans. Any thoughts about how you will or will not choose to incorporate the power of AI into your business? Is this something that you're starting to think about strategically, creatively? Where does it play in your world?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about it for a minute. I wrote a Medium article on this in 2016 on artificial intelligence. It's not, it's been on our radar for a long time. In the last year, and especially in the last 6 months, it has exploded in its capacity. Yeah. So I saw this meme recently, like all of these kids from The Simpsons yelling at Bart saying, "Say it. Say it." And Bart was like, there's a little CEO over his head, and he's just got his head down. He's going, "Yes, we will incorporate AI into our systems." You know, like he's just like totally discouraged because every CEO has got to say that statement. Yes, we will incorporate AI into our systems. Yeah. You kind of have to.
Yeah.
We're a technology company.
It's one of those
company.
I said to someone the other day, it's like, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. Well, you know, we better figure out how to join them. And it's like people denying that the World Wide Web was coming, or that, you know, certain things in these milestones of our heavily accelerated lives and business worlds, you know, it's inevitable. So,
I mean, we just came out of this crazy, unpredictable period of the pandemic. And just as soon as the waters settle, we're now in a super crazy, unpredictable period of AI.
Yeah.
But here's where I stand on it is that, I mean, you look at, I do digital painting. I'm talking to you on this. I run a tech company and I was painting. That's a oil painting right there. So is that. So is this. Like, I think that these are all tools for us to express our creativity, and AI is not a different thing from that. It's another tool. Now, we have a kind of standard principles that we operate under when we use AI at Lytro. Be ethical. Do work worth doing. think of it as a collaboration, learn something, you know, like I don't go, hey, can you make me some art like Bobby Chu's art? I go to the AI and I say, tell me some attributes. Let's look at this work and help me determine what the attributes are. For example, like, might want to do a Wes Anderson background combined with Quentin Tarantino. I don't say mash those up. I say, let's look at the qualities of work of Wes Anderson. What are the elements that make it what it is? Let's define and examine the elements that make it appealing. And then I can choose what elements I want to use. And then I can go to Tarantino and do the same thing. What are the elements I want to use from each one of these so that that I understand deeply what is happening? And then I can control the mashup on it. Our stance is that you can kind of think about it as this grid where you have like on this end, you have efficiency, and on this, you have performance. So I don't know which corner it's going to show up here, but like in the upper right-hand corner, you have high efficiency, high performance. And the lower, you have low efficiency, low performance, right? And so down here is no AI or messy AI. Over here is amateurs using AI. So you have maybe high efficiency, but low performance. Up here, you have creatives doing amazing things. That's high performance, but low efficiency. In the upper right-hand corner, you've got highly effective creatives using the best tools in the business. And so there's high performance and high efficiency. And so that's where we play. If it's useful to be able to use the tools of, machine learning and digital expression and technology to be able to get high performance and high efficiency, then I think that we're all for it. But it takes high performing creatives to be able to move into this space.
Right. And to understand what to do with it. And I love what you said before. You know, I feel like there's a masterclass in your future that you're going to need to put together on leveraging the attributes and the extractions of that work and how to create with it, not, you know, let it take us over and, you know, really get the best of it. And I think that's what everybody's really trying to figure out. I mean, you know, we're going to have to circle back on this conversation in 3, 4, 5 months. I mean, we're not talking years from now, we're talking months, the way, you know, the lightning speed at which things are moving. And it's, you know, it's a really interesting question. It's powerful and there's value and there's opportunity. It's just, it's really, how do we extract the best of it and use it all in a way that can be meaningful and, you know, God willing, not alienate people from jobs and doing great work and really leaning into the best of the human element of it all. But I've got another couple of questions before we have to go that I really would love to ask you. You know, you took a leap. You took a leap of faith at a very pivotal time. You went from a very secure place and decided to become an entrepreneur. And I just want to know, like, at that inflection point in your life, was it a no-brainer? Was it, you know, 6 months of sleepless nights? What convinced you that you had to do it? The risk, the reward factor, you know, so many people that tune into this podcast are looking, you know, for guidance, stories from others who have been there, done that, that maybe just give them a level of confidence. You know, what helped you through some of those challenging moments, hours, days, weeks, months, to know you were on the right path for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, you always wonder if you're on the right path. But the point is, you're on the path that you're on. And because you're on it, it's the right path. Mm-hmm. For me, that writing a letter was really the... Like, until I got to that point, yeah, I was worried, you know, that Disney was wanting they were calling me in to negotiate a new 5-year contract. And I was like, man, I am not sure I want to be here for another 5 years. And so, that letter was a big deal for me, to write a letter to myself from 50 years in the future. And once I did that, that gave me some confidence. And then I started making some moves. Like I rented a place up in Santa Barbara because that's where I wanted to live. And so I was still living down in Los Angeles, still working, but I had paid for a place up in Santa Barbara so that the minute my contract was up, I was ready to go. You know, I think that reinvention, it takes courage. But yeah. Courage, the core of that word is heart, right? Cœur from the French, right? And so, you know, we're in this time where there's just so much data that everybody's chasing all the time. Do I have this, you know, this spreadsheet right? Or is this like, does it add up? And I don't know if it really has to add up from a number standpoint. You know, I think that in an unpredictable time, you know, one of my teachers says the highest intelligence is the intelligence of the heart. And so I think that that's the place to think about, like, you are going to need some courage, especially in these times when things are changing. And so what does that mean? It means, like, look at freaking AI, go deep on it, figure it out. Like, if that's something that scares you, face it. Those things that are, that cause you some worry or some tension, you got to face them. You got to have to have courage in the face of those things. And in that space, I think that reinventing yourself is not only possible, but it's necessary.
I love that. I'm going to ask you our final question, as much as I don't want to, and I know it won't be our final conversation, but I feel like there are probably some people who you have sat back and looked at, watched, reflected on, been in awe of or intrigued by in your life, given all the different realms that you have played in. If you could have a dinner party and could have three or four people around that table to have a glass of wine, a tequila shot, break bread with, who might those people be, dead or alive?
Oh, dead or alive. That's good.
Dead or alive.
Yeah, I think Leonardo da Vinci would be one.
Amazing.
Deepak Chopra would be another. Every time that guy speaks, I take notes. I just think that in our time right now, there's gross leadership and there's subtle leadership. Gross leadership is everybody who gets votes to be a leader. And they're messing things up. And the subtle leaders are those who are really holding the heart space for the world. And so I think he's one of those. I'd definitely bring Mitch, my best friend, because I wouldn't want to be at a dinner like that without somebody talking to you about it afterwards.
And I just got to see him 2 weeks ago. So love that.
It would be something like that. You know, I think that John Singer Sargent, some painters who I really love because
amazing.
I think they solve for the light. And I think that that's what we're all doing. And whatever work it is that we do, we're solving for the light, whether it's the light bouncing off the soft cheek or a peach or the light coming from within or our own light. We're looking to solve for the light. So that's what my
conversation is. You just gave me chills, Dave. I love that. You know what? That is just such a beautiful way for us to end this incredible conversation. And thank you. Like, just really precious words, precious thoughts. I love the lens through which you view and live your life. And I'm excited for you seeing the journey that you've been on and what you've been able to accomplish and how you've married the beauty and the artistry of the creative force that you are and the platform that you're giving to hundreds and hundreds of others. Because not everybody can figure that out. They just know the space they want to be in. And you've really created an environment through your company to really offer that. And I think that's really special and very giving. And you're just amazing. So thank you. Thank you for being my guest today.
It's been my pleasure and honor, Kathy. And I'll leave you kind of with this last quote that was really inspiring for me. And it comes, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it comes from Simone de Beauvoir, the French philosopher. And she said something like, you will create your greatest freedom for yourself by creating opportunities for other people to have their greatest freedom. And so that's a real motivator for me. I think for me, that's like one of the greatest things that's ever been said in 20th century philosophy.
That's amazing.
So that's really the thing that drives me, that helps me to reinvent, to continue to look for opportunities like that. And I'm delighted to reconnect with you. It's been lovely.
Likewise. Well, we're gonna keep talking, you and I, and I can't wait to see what the next chapter in your world is going to be as well, especially with all that's coming upon us with AI and everything else in business. And for those listening, thank you so much for joining us today. You'll find ways to reach and connect with Dave and his company in the show notes. By all means, we'll have our YouTube clips and this broadcast, and go to Spotify, Apple, anywhere else to share it with other people. The ReinventionExchange.com is a place where you'll find blogs and interviews and virtual chats and podcasts and all kinds of inspirational content. And of course, my book, Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For, is available through there or all your favorite places to buy books like Amazon and Apple Books. And Dave, have a beautiful rest of your day. And thanks to everybody, and happy reinventing. Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? And discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.